earlier this week on 1UP FM.
And now, Anthony Gallegos on Yodel.
So, people that don't watch the episodes like 1 and 2 that closely won't notice, but there is like
of Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. When I say episodes 1 and 2, there is nothing else. You know what I mean? Like I would say the name of this thing first, but Star Wars needs no introduction.
All right.
But there is a female equivalent of Yoda on the Jedi Council, and last week on GFW, all the guys were clowning on her, and they told me ahead of time that that's what they're going to be doing, which is why I wasn't on the show, and won't be on any future GFWs because like. I can't handle that they've just been like they can clown on a lot of shit, but Star Wars I take kind of personally, especially when it comes to Yaddle, because one time I got some play from a primordial midget. Primordial midgets are really, really tiny, and she was cosplaying as Yaddle at the New York Comic Con I went to. So I take it kind of on a personal level, especially because, you know, a lot of people don't know that Yaddle's like an extra special character. You know, she like worked with one of the head of the Jedi Council, and then she suffered a century of imprisonment. This shit's on Wikipedia. It's all expanded universe. And so after suffering a century of imprisonment, she was given a temporary seat on the Jedi Council. And then she went and fought, after training some really hardcore Jedi Council members, I mean, like, you know, Jedi Knights, she ended up fighting on this planet just prior to the Clone Wars, and she sacrificed herself by absorbing a chemical weapon blast that would have destroyed a city, which Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi were in. So she sacrificed herself, saving Obi-Wan and Anakin, making Episode 3 possible, and, you know, was then replaced by Shaak Ti, who we all know if we all watch the Clone Wars cartoons. Shaak Ti. Plus, you know, I was talking to Sean last night, and it was just pissing me off because he was clowning on Twi'leks, because I told him Twi'leks are like the single most beautiful alien species, and he said that that's retarded, but it's a known fact, like in Star Wars lore, that Twi'leks are just like the most gorgeous girls. Twi'leks being the head-tails girls that you see in Jabba's palace dancing. But yeah, it all comes down to Yaddle. There's been a lot of people after that GFW making some really nasty photoshops of Yaddle milk and shit like that for Sean, and I just don't appreciate that. I take it very personal, so... Fuck GFW Radio, and I ain't gonna be on that shit no more. You guys don't know shit about Yaddle.
Thank you, Anthony, for bringing this to light.
Hello, and welcome to GFW Radio. This is the podcast for August 20th, 2008. If everything just went right with the audio, then what you heard was a clip of Anthony on 1UP FM. Talking some shit about us, and I don't know, Sean. This whole thing is. I thought it was a joke at first, and actually, I thought that you were like totally in on it because it just sounds like something you would do. And so I was sort of laughing, and I was like kind of laughing NeoGAF when people were like saying, "Ha ha, they're kidding around." And then, but what's just weird is like I guess he wasn't kidding.
Well, and people posted on our forums, too, and Spout is true. The best analysis I've seen yet is that they're comparing Anthony to Isaac Hayes and the whole thing with South Park where when they made fun of Scientology and he kind of flipped out. But in this case, it's worse because I don't know. I don't want to rip on him because seriously, he – you know how there's this thing?
Well, I don't know.
There's something in every friend you have in his life. There's just this one area that you know you don't tread into. It's kind of like everyone –
I guess
laugh
I just
at it when they're not
yeah,
there.
But I mean, we joke about this shit all the time. I mean, and he's been in on the joke, so I don't get why all of a sudden he just decides to be a big fucking crybaby about Star Wars.
Did you know
I mean,
this though? He's got a tattoo of a Twi'lek on his arm, and when he flexes it, he thinks that it makes her look like she's dancing. That's true. And also, the last time when I was in his car in his back seat, he had a plastic lightsaber with like a telescoping blade, and that's another fact. I swear to you. That fucking lightsaber was in his backseat with the half-eaten Taco Bell burrito.
I never liked that kid anyway.
I mean, you know, we joke about geeky shit all the time. Like, we're total nerds. We make fun of ourselves. So I don't know why some guy, you know, here who really should have been thankful in a way he was on this podcast. I mean, he was basically just kind of like a nobody, you know, when he first started. And now, you know, he's just like fucking trashing us on some other podcast. And I know we'll be in here and we'll say like, fuck Retronauts or whatever, but like, we're basically kidding. But I mean, he's on this other podcast.
Yeah. That's
some fucking douche who's been here for like 6 months saying fuck GFW Radio.
And then he got people to know his name, the whole Chuff Love thing, which we like indulged in. And then as soon as like people are familiar with his name, he's like, oh, I'm going to be on the 1UP FM, which is a great show and stuff. But it's like, I mean, there's no reason that he just had to. I mean, I think it's either an excuse. Well, I don't know. He's serious about the Star Wars shit. He did.
Is he? Because maybe this is part of some, like, I don't know, Andy Kaufman sort of like, you know, faux Andy Kaufman. I wouldn't give him that much credit, but, you know, to sort of like clown us, you know, take it to some extreme where he's fucking around, but maybe still fucking around.
What's your take on it, Robert?
I don't. I just think that some people are way too serious about their fandom about things. I mean, you see it every day on message boards, people freaking out because, you know, they find out that Two Human sucks, or talking shit about Star Trek, or talking shit about Star Wars, whatever. People come to define themselves by the things that they watch or play or whatever, and it just gets out of control, and I just think he's, you know, I think he's just a little too into it.
And Ryan? That was Robert Ashley.
All right, I didn't do the intro because of this little, this whole fucking soap opera just kind of got me weirded out this week.
Yeah, no, he's been taking it hard. You know, Anthony, he's my reviews intern. We had to actually move him off because it wasn't working out.
You took him off reviews.
Yeah, after the whole Star Wars.
So what's he doing now? Did you see him?
He's back on my cheats again.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, we just got an email that went around too from some pissed off reader who was a guy who said he was like 60 something and he was complaining about the Crisis walkthrough, because which Anthony happened to write. And in this walkthrough, there's a part that's like, you know, you want to be covert here. And then in the walkthrough, the next thing it says is like, pull out your shotgun. And the guy's like, since when is a fucking shotgun covert? You know? So, yeah, it's good to know they got him on my cheats.
Yeah. Great.
What do you think of all this, Anthony?
I think that the person, like, it's totally being taken out of hand. I mean, fucking sounds like a moron. Like, I was looking through his wallet, and he has a thing from Star Wars Insider from when he was a kid.
Really?
And it says, yeah, it says Official Jedi Knight.
Holy shit, God. That's real.
And his fucking chicken scratch. Wow. I took that from him.
Oh, my God.
The Official Star Wars Fan Club.
And he still has it.
Yeah.
Star Wars
so
Insider.
So part of him actually still thinks it's
yeah, there
a
was
source
one,
of pride.
Yeah, there was one time I was with him at a concert, and one of the guys started playing a Star Wars song, and he said, like, the guy on stage was like, are there any Jedi Knights out there? And everyone was like, woo. And Anthony got all pissed and pulled out his actual Jedi Knight card and was like, thought all the people were fucking
those people are full of it.
So even big of a loser.
Yeah,
than
I mean, not to be mistaken with his new, like, 2004 Star Wars Fan Club membership card.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
So what do you think we should do with this guy? I mean, should we just forget about him, or can we rehabilitate him somehow? Like, you seem to know him more than us.
Yeah, but people that reach that stage, like you're saying with the Taco Bell wrapper and like the lightsaber, like
that lightsaber is real. You could vouch for that, right?
Yeah, that's definitely real. As was the happy
what
Taco
color,
Bell
burrito. What color is it?
It's a red one. He got it as a gift from a friend. Because, you know, like,
does it make sound?
He's maniacal enough about it that people buy shit for him because they're like, oh, this is Star Wars, and I found this at a yard sale. He'll like it.
Yeah.
You know, and the sad thing is that he does.
So that's how he that's how he ended up with the lightsaber in the back.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Has crazy. He ever,
I mean, like, the
in
thing
his
the,
adult
the,
life?
The thing about him, the sad thing is, like, you know, like, his parents know he's, like, 25 and everything like that, but when it comes to Christmas, it won't be uncommon for, like, you know, some fucking Star Wars toy to, like, make it into his stocking. It might just be, like a rainbow-colored Darth Vader pin, something like that. I mean,
wow.
It just happens.
Has he, in his adult life, ever purchased, like, a Star Wars toy for himself?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, I can remember this time when he was, like, in Canada, and he went out of his way to, like, buy this one figure just because it said the name in French and in English.
Wait, that made it, like, more rare,
more collectible,
valuable, or something?
So he thought.
Or he could, like, pimp it in case he met a French girl like Dr. Green?
Nah, I mean...
Yeah, that's how I scored.
Yeah. You know, he hasn't bought any toys in a while, but when he went to LucasArts and they gave him a Lego set, it did stoke his game boner pretty bad.
Okay. Is there anything else to be said about Yaddle?
Nah,
you know, now that we're on this, we could up the insanity by revealing that Ryan Scott doesn't exist. He's been a character
apparently I'm a figment.
That was truly one of the single best PMs we ever got.
Now check out this Ryan Scott impersonation. I'm perfect at it.
Okay, here go.
Here we go.
What the hell?
Shh.
That was a pretty good impersonation.
Really quiet.
Last week, I got a personal message through 1UP about Ryan, and they had saw that you had put up a preview on the site, and they saw your byline, And they're like, what the hell? I showed it to you. They seem pretty serious, right?
Yeah.
They're like, I thought Ryan was like, it's been this running joke that between you and Jeff that you guys why does he have a byline now?
Oh, man.
So I talk so little that my existence is in question.
So, that's fantastic.
I imagine Ryan as, you know, that character in an 80s action movie who doesn't say much, but when he does, it's like of grave importance.
Exactly.
You know, you're a man who has economy with words.
Are you talking about like the guy in what was that one movie where like
Rambo?
No, he ended up he ordered French toast. He never talks, and he ordered French toast, and then the chef like pulled it down the back of his pants, and then up under his up through his ass, and then under his balls, and then pulled the French toast up from the front of his underwear, and they served it in this one line for like. You know, an hour was like, someone's like, how do you like that French toast? And he's like, it's good.
You're making this up.
I'm serious. That was some fucking movie.
I know what you're talking about with this French toast thing. Wasn't that like an America's Funniest Home Videos video?
No, it was like one of those kind of like American Pie type movies, you know?
Okay. Wow.
So
I don't know.
So should I read some of the shit that people...
Some of the Yaddle
stuff? Save the rap for me. I'll do that one. Yeah, okay. So Anthony posted and... was basically stoking the flames. We wanted this to be as big as when Randy Macho Man Savage split up with his partnership with Hulk Hogan over like Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And so like Anthony
I couldn't sleep for a week
posted,
when that happened.
You know, on his blog last night about how, you know, hey, this is it. This is for real. And he got some feedback he wants to share.
So I'll start with the PM I got though. So this was a PM that said, don't be sore at our boys on the Brodeo. They got, and this is how he said it. They got to roll raw, else they lose their street cred. You're a good fit to their little club. Don't quit. You have to forgive, but don't quit. Seriously, though, I hope you're joking. Chuff it out. That's what he said.
Chuff it out. I want a t-shirt that says
Chuff it out.
Yeah.
All right. Be our new slogan.
So then there was another guy. This is Omni Avenger on my fucking blog that said, you said the New York Comic Con, she was awesome. But she must have got around, though, because a buddy and I, he was playing a Wookiee and I, a Rodian, got to know her a little bit better. She did that thing with the half twist while holding a lightsaber and shouting, force push. You know
what I mean? Wait, by the way, for reference, if you're listening, awesome. You don't know what this is about. Well, you do because you heard the clip. But yeah, Anthony said that he got some play from a primordial dwarf who would cosplay as Yaddle.
It gets better for Star Wars fans. So he says, well, you know what happens after that? With some irony, afterward, my Wookiee friend and I had an argument about who shot first.
Oh my God. That was
we got to hire that guy. That's some.
When we got writing. Ryan talking, the look on his face now says we're not going to hear another one the rest of the
so
year.
So then there was a guy named Pararobot, and his post was titled, okay, look, I'm a really big Star Wars fan more than any console or game or anything else. My geekdom started with A New Hope, and it will always remain. But come on, even this seems immature. GFW thrives on its ability to go joking on the entire geek world. It's who they are. I was bowled over laughing when they were making up shit just because it was so stupid and funny. But it's only a joke. It's what they do. To react in this fashion, it's real maturity. I thought you were a good addition to GFW, but this is just childish and unbecoming.
Wow.
So I'll just hit up this one, and then I'll let you read the rap, which says, I want more info on you saying you got play from a Yaddle cosplay midget, especially after it clearly took all your courage to strike a conversation with a GameStar chick.
It's because when you're in costume, you've got a lot more guts. You
exactly,
know, like
right.
You can hit on...
Your role-playing.
That's why people go to conventions and cosplay.
Right, because you're not talking as Anthony.
It starts on that page and goes
as...
on to the next.
Exactly.
Whatever.
All right, and then one real fan.
And then, Sean, could you explain your shirt after you do the rap?
I can't, there's nothing to be said other than what you see.
It's like Janet Reno with Janet Reno crown. Like the head of Janet Reno an eagle.
That's the thing, is it's a harpy.
Oh, it is Janet Reno.
It's a harpy, though.
Yeah.
It's a Janet Reno harpy.
Let's finish up on
all right,
that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
My Janet Reno fetish.
All right.
Yeah. So, wow. Kind Galaxy posted like this rap. I don't know how it's gonna work because I haven't tried to perform.
You should just read like a poem.
Y'all don't know shit about Yaddle. 0.61 meters tall. She stood for us all. As a Jedi Master, she had grace and wisdom to aid her. When left out of Episode 2 due to budget concerns, in fanfic level canon, she saved the future Darth Vader.
For that the respect of any Jedi she earns, how dare you you disgrace a figure so divine. Her legend echoes throughout space and time. The grand battle she died for got won, the greatest story told by scribe Jude Watson. No doubt Sean Elliott is weak as fuck, son. He's never felt the fist of puppeteer Phil Eason. Y'all don't know shit about Yaddle. 6.61 meters tall, she stood for us all.
Wow. Those are like some of the best blog comments I've ever heard.
Yeah, those
heard.
Are really great.
Good stuff.
GFW yeah. listeners are...
this inspired some good creativity.
So... let's get this shit out of the way. I was going to say we talk about games. That's coming because we actually have all been playing new releases.
Yes,
so
we've
got
been.
Like preview material and stuff. But like on the elevator down here, Anthony got an idea how to revive print, or basically how to succeed in the cutthroat print market.
And it was
2008.
Wait, do we want to say this on air? Won't we be giving it away?
I mean, who else makes magazines these days?
Who else? Yeah, no one's going to try.
That's the thing is, you know, we're always talking about how we can get new readers this and... you know, we've been going on this new art direction and all that.
And competing with online.
Yeah. But the reality of it is that there are plenty of people, maybe they don't have access to online magazines, all they got, but you need to cater to them. And those are prisoners.
They are.
Prison gamer.
You look at our EGM letters and like 90% of them are from prison. So I'm just thinking we need to have a shout out. We need to have a column written up by a prisoner where he talks about like how he was playing Saints Row before lockdown or something like that.
I used to do EGM letters, like respond and read EGM letters like a couple of years ago. And it was always amazing to me how many prison letters there were. And they were all of the same kind of like, man, I remember back when I got to play video games, like Bionic Commando, man. I love Spy Hunter. Do you still have that, man? Like, your magazine is the only thing that keeps gaming alive for me. So, and it's like all this. So I thought it would be even better to expand this prison concept and do a magazine that's like stuff that prisoners can't get their hands on but want to read about in a magazine. Oh,
but I think, too, we could have a special column that's like we only preview games that are coming out 25 years from now. So that play them. We can have them send in. Another thing is that they often submitted in their letters, because I did the EGM letters too, they often submitted all this shit about like, if I could make a game, this would be my game. So we can have like,
oh, that would be rad.
Like, you know, like you, just a whole page after page of like the games that like the prisoners would be making if you would let them get out of fucking computer. You know?
I can see that feature though. Like the head would be like, you know, doing 25 to life is tough, but just think of it this way. When you get out, virtual reality will be a reality.
Oh my god. We gotta mock this up. We gotta start doing it.
We gotta do it.
Ryan, how do you feel about that?
Pretty good idea.
Would you be?
I'd work on that magazine.
Yeah, there you go. You do the reviews of prisoner made games.
Yeah.
And that'd probably be a good audience because they're not going to complain that you know, like you scored something too low or too high or that like you're biased. Like, it's like, dude, they'll take your word for it.
Hey, fuck, you know what? There's a game.
I'm bad. It means
we'll
I don't have
rate
to
everything on pack of cigarettes. How many packs of cigarettes would you trade for this?
There's a game coming out for the PC soon called Prison Tycoon 4. That means there was a Prison Tycoon 1 through 3. So, you know.
Prison Tycoon?
Yeah.
That's kind of sad.
That game sounds as good as Country Fried Steak Wednesdays in the prison cafeteria.
I wonder what's in that game. Like, if it has shit where, like, you can run a racket by getting drugs in, you know? And, like,
right. Are you a tycoon within the prison walls, or is it, like...
Or
you're
maybe,
becoming a tycoon
maybe
by
you're
building
one of,
a
like,
prison.
Maybe you're like the private prison corporations, and you're like, how little can I spend on a meal so that
right,
I can
right.
squeeze another dime out of the public's fascination
yeah.
with locking up drug criminals?
How many cots can you fit yeah. in a single like space by like whatever the fucking squad, the floor plan?
That must
is.
Have been the bottom of the tycoon barrel.
Yeah.
Yo, God.
But when you get to the last level, you get to put together a secret black site prison, and it's like
there's also Fairy Godmother Tycoon.
There is.
I'm not making it up. There's a game called Fairy Godmother Tycoon.
What does that even
Published
mean?
By EA.
What does that mean?
I
Fairy
I
Godmothers
know.
Aren't into money.
Like, who knew that
they're
being,
like into granting wishes?
Being update. A fairy godmother required serious management skills.
Hey, here's an update on Prison Tycoon, right, from the internet that we were just talking about.
I love the internet.
So it's a business simulation game. The objectives are to keep the prison running, keep the staff happy, the prisoners in line, all while trying to make money. So it's like, yeah, it must be like a private prison.
Jeez.
You're able to choose between a New England prison, a modern U.S. Southwestern-style prison, and a West Coast prison modeled after San Quentin. The game was released to poor reviews as a result of dated graphics, lack of depth, and replay value.
I thought Prison Tycoon was going to be hot with these graphics of the last gen.
The jury just spoke on the fucking gaming, on the gaming press right there, if anything. 25 to life for us, dude.
Oh, fuck.
So this is what we're going to do, huh? This is our next move, our next career
move?
Dude,
the graphics fucking suck.
I've seen better Shanks, man. I'll tell you that.
I couldn't hide Playboy in my toilet in the fucking Ziploc bag. So now, just like that, we're going to go into game talk. That's just how it's going to be.
Snap.
That's how it's going to be.
We could
actually get into a real argument, Anthony, you and I, instead of a fake one. Over a space seat.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way since that's last.
Or is that
week's
old?
News. It's old, but we need to hear it.
Is it off the shelves already?
It's not old if you're in San Quentin.
Bargain bin.
True.
Yeah, I guess the thing is that I should make the caveat that I only played like the first 5 hours. Like four.
Well, basically, you played all of it then.
I thought it was cool.
What was cool about it?
I thought the storyline was actually. It surprised me with. That I was kind of actually looking forward to seeing the twist that it takes. Because I could see him coming. You know what I mean?
That's the thing. If you've read, you know, or seen any sci-fi in the
Don't
last...
Don't pull no punches, Jeff.
Oh, 30 or 40 years, you know, you might have a clue as to, you know, the quote-unquote twist. Like, oh my God, maybe that kind of sinister-sounding AI isn't on our side. who ever thought of that?
Oh...
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was a fun point-and-click action game. I didn't quite think it was a quite as middling.
We need you to be a little bit stronger in your opinion. Right now, you're kind of only so you're straddling the fence. We need you to be really into the game.
Well, that's the thing I haven't.
Is it another thing like your lightsaber where it was just there? You found it on the street, and so you put it.
Well, that's how I felt about the game too, though. I mean, I gave it a C. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, I might have given it lower. In fact, when I turned it in, I thought I turned it in as a C minus, but whatever it should have been.
Yeah, see, like, I don't know. From what I played,
so,
I thought it was.
It's like,
high C.
Yeah, I mean, you
B.
can like, go through it and you can click on shit and it dies. You buy stuff. I mean, it wasn't like a disaster, but what I said in the review was I couldn't believe how utterly mediocre it was from a company that usually tries so much harder.
Well, you said it was an action RPG with no. No, like, real loot, no real character leveling up.
There isn't.
Right?
It's not that there's any real. It doesn't exist. There's no character creation. There's no loot at all. There's no character customization,
well,
per
there's
se.
Loot. I mean, not even in the most, like, you get better as you go along in some way, I assume.
Yeah, you do. You get to put points into skills.
You can put points into two different skill trees that are all... utterly generic. The two skill trees are all passive skills. I mean, every single thing that you work on, like beating the shit, and you level up, and it's like, okay, now my choices are I can get a 1% boost to my two hit, 1% whatever. There's no actual like cool talents. There's nothing to make you
right.
Now I get to whatever do the.
The fact also that you can level up does not a good game make. I mean,
of course not.
Putting that on the back of the box for like.
Yes.
Every fucking Dynasty Warriors sequel, pseudo sequel, and
actually, you don't even level up. There's not even levels. It's just
right.
You reach certain points in the game, and it's like now you get two more points.
Right. See, so. But there's also a little bit of character customization in the workbench thing, where you get to spend your parts. Like,
right. But again,
building up your passive abilities and stuff.
But that's the thing. They're all passive. Like you get a new weapon. Say you find a weapon on the ground, and then when you get. Instead of dropping loot, it drops like generic parts. Literally, that's all it is, parts. Okay, so you have one pool of parts. You'll have like at some point, you'll accumulate like 300. You go to a workbench and then you can spend those points in like leveling up your gun. But all the ways in which you could customize your gun are like, again, 1% damage increase. It's all like fucking numbers on a spreadsheet. It's like, dude, you created a sci-fi universe. Where's like, you know, come up with some cool sci-fi shit to attach to the gun or give me something. You know, it's like it never made it past the Excel part of the game.
It's Anthony
stronger,
in the background.
Stronger.
But
I know.
And I'm
I
not
like
going to let him cut in.
I like
the game sucked.
Jesus.
No.
Ow.
Now, the thing is I guess it's like I hear Jeff's complaints, and I think they're totally valid. I guess it's like Jeff wanted more RPG. and they focus too much on the action. Like, they didn't throw in a bunch of loot, so you don't spend all this time in your inventory screen, like, scrolling over stats, like, which is better? You don't ever stop the game to do that. They didn't add, like, a huge party system like the old Dungeon Siege games, mm-hmm. so you don't sit there and be like, I need this guy to attack this, mm-hmm. this guy to attack this. No, you're like, instead you're playing and you're like, I'm shooting shit, I'm dodging bullets, I'm throwing grenades.
Day at the office.
They made it, yeah.
They did make it more action-y, but then in that case, I felt like they didn't go enough that way then either. Like the fact that you can't move and shoot at the same time. So right then, to me, that's saying...
Resident Evil 4 says hi.
Okay.
Jeff, you seem touché. To think that
this is like kind of a classic video game nerd argument, though.
It kind
like
of is.
Between someone yep. who's like, this mediocre game sucks, and the other guy's like, this mediocre game's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I hate you.
Yeah.
Jeff, you seem to think that the game failed on a global level because part of the twist is that you're able to take cybernetic enhancements at the price of your own humanity, or you're able to like upgrade this Android or something that accompanies you.
Right.
But having upgraded yourself with all the taking the right. cybernetic route and having supposedly lost your humanity entirely, the game had some pretty
right.
sad
ways. In fact, that's where I lost it with the game. Up until then, I was like, okay, you know, fine. They're not trying very hard on this level or this level. They're sort of taking the easy way out, but I'm clicking my way through killing monsters. Fine. I can spend the weekend doing that. Great. So up till then, it was definitely a solid C. I wasn't hating the game. But it's that conceit, which is what the previews all along, including ones that we wrote, said. Like, well, the cool thing about this game is that at points in the game, you're going to get a chance to replace a part of your own human body with a cybernetic part. And you have to make these decisions carefully along the way, because if you keep doing that, you're going to keep losing your humanity. And at some point, you're going to be past this point of no return. And do you want to make that kind of sacrifice to save the human race and become some kind of like cyborg? And what happens if you do? Is that going to like fuck with your whole beliefs and your whole world? And is it going to change the ending to the game? So I decided at some point I'm going to go full robot. I'm just going to take it all the way. And, you know, they keep warning you. The NPCs are like, you shouldn't do that. Don't do it. You know, it's not worth it.
So at some point, do you upgrade to robot junk?
Yeah.
Like, do you get, like, cyber junk?
That's the chick
junk?
He was just saying
you get waist
to do
down.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah,
waist
down.
Waist down, yeah. Wow. You get your codpiece, your Jethro Tull codpiece.
But they could still have a unit coming out, though, like, you know, RoboCop, how he still has, like, a face coming out of, like, the robot
it's
thing.
It's like the one piece of flesh. Look, I'm willing to go all the way except for one
yeah.
part.
Yeah. 99% robot.
Yeah.
So, you know, you keep doing it, and you get – and there's no reason not to as you're going along at first. Because they basically say, like, ah, you probably shouldn't do that because it's going to be bad. But it's like your choice is, am I going to take the 5% attack bonus that my cybernetic arm gives me or not? Well, I think I'll take the bonus. So you do. But then it gets up to where it's the brain, okay? That's the final one is your brain. You're going to replace your own human brain with the cybernetic brain. And by this point, and I apologize if anybody thinks I'm spoiling here, but really – the spoiler is like, wait till this is like $10, okay? Don't. So I'm doing you a favor, I promise. You know, it becomes clear by the time you're at the brain part that that oh my god, that AI is actually up to no good, and oh my god, maybe the robot people have like another agenda. So like, am I going to join that side or am I going to stick with the humans? Okay, so the brain thing comes up, and I really, as a gamer, I at that moment, I thought like, well, fuck, this is the part where if it's going to matter, it's going to matter. And what if I do this, and my character is going to start like, you know, start speaking weird shit or bleeps and bloops, or I'm going to start turning on the other human, you know, AIs or whatever. But I went for it. I'm just going to play the bad guy. I never do this time. I'm going to. So I took the brain. And nothing fucking happens. Nothing happens. It doesn't change the game at all. You're still, like, your voiceover is still, now I'm going to go, you know, you're still the sort of, like, John Wayne all-American hero. You got a fucking robot brain now. You're not even human anymore. Your brain is gone. Your brain's been replaced by a cybernetic brain.
The only difference is that
now I'm going to really take him on.
The only difference is that now you have this real affinity for Kraftwerk. It's like all you ever really want to listen to.
This is the only real music.
And then, you know, so you go on and you have the boss battle and you save everything. And then, like, humanity saved and there's a cutscene of you with, like, the chick in the game. And you're like, you know, like the sun is setting. And it's like happily ever after. And she's stuck with you. You're a fucking robot. And the game doesn't even acknowledge it. I couldn't believe it.
Last week when we were talking.
So the choice was nothing.
Talking about Braid and Jonathan Blow and how he has this notion of there being dissonance between the story that a gameplay and interactivity communicates and what the actual narrative is. And in this case, both the gameplay and the story are running counter to the story, if that's possible, right? You know, I mean, there's like the setup for the story is telling you one thing, but then even the narrative itself and the gameplay are both saying that it's entirely irrelevant whether or not you remain a human or
exactly.
whether or not you take the risk, the alleged risk of becoming a robot.
Yeah, I mean, they could have said, okay, you saved the world, but look what you did to yourself. You don't get the girl now. You get this pile of parts or whatever, you know.
Did they just run out of money or something? I mean, that had to be the plan. It's sort of hard to believe that they would emphasize that stuff and then give you no, you know, feedback.
That's what the whole thing felt like to me. It felt like either this thing got scaled back at the end or they just were like, oh, fuck it. And just, you know, how many people are really going to buy this? Let's just finish it.
Yeah.
Let's move on. And it really felt like they lost their creative drive along the way. Hmm. I'm being harder on
maybe it happened.
I
mean, the scores have all been, I think, in the same range.
Yeah. I don't know. It was worse that they tried.
Anthony.
I know. Anthony's all quiet over here now because I've been clowning on the game. See,
you,
but
you
the
think
first
this is like Yaddle the game.
Well,
something.
The first part is, you know, that's what I'm telling you though. It's like the first
day.
Part's great. You know, I love this kind of game. You know, I play all the
that's
Diablo.
What I'm saying. I didn't play it to the end.
Right, yes. And when you get to the end, it's like, well, why do you even bother with that story if it just didn't matter? Just don't
I
even
that
give me
same
the story.
Experience
then.
Playing. Too Human. I mean, I was playing like the completed version, but it came out like prior to the review copy. And I played it for about half an hour, and it's another one of those games where you're essentially just doing the same thing over and over again to acquire loot. And at some point, it wanted me to go to this like Arcadian world to turn a crank and then go back into Chrome Land so that a door would open. And then as soon as I did that, it had me do it three more times. Then I turned the game off at that point, and that was the end of it. And it's like, this isn't a distinction to someone like, you know, some people say I can play this kind of game. Even you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. It's a game I could play all weekend and click on shit and kill it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like, dude, it doesn't get past that. As soon as I hit this point, for the same reason I told you, you know, like I turn up Batman Begins, like I hit this point and like that's it. It's like there's so many good movies to watch and books to read and games to play. Like, do you really need to click on some shit just because it's theoretically fun to click on shit?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the case of Space Siege, I wouldn't have continued if I wasn't reviewing, I got to say. And the for me, it was the loot thing. And, you know, that's maybe just where we're different there, which is totally cool. Like, if you want to play more of an action game. But, like, for me, the hook with Diablo and Titan Quest and even Dungeon Siege was to get stuff, you know? Like, what's going to drop this time? Is it going to be that epic purple item that, you know, nobody else got? You know, for me, I admit it. For me, that's like a,
that sounds like buying Pokemon cards.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
I guess it's the same appeal.
It's
the same appeal, yeah.
It is.
But it's chromed
out.
For me, it's always been the storyline of games that I guess...
And at first,
even
I did
it's
like
super
the story.
Lame. I still
and I
still
and I
it.
Liked it too at the beginning. I did. I mean, I wanted to review the game because after the demo, I liked it.
Yeah,
know?
When
that's
I saw
why
a demo,
I wanted
they,
to do it.
They also made me believe that all that robotic choices and everything was a lot bigger of a deal than it was.
Exactly. And so for a good chunk of the game, and certainly much more so than Dungeon Siege, which ultimately I think are better games, but Dungeon Siege's stories were nothing.
Right.
And here for a good while, probably as long as you played. The storyline's progressing along. It's on a nice pace with a couple nice turns, but then it just kind of all turns to shit.
But they went out of their way to tell you that it was going to be like this big choice and that it was going to like rock the foundation of the game. That's
go
some
look
incredibly
at the,
bad PR.
It was on the cover
like,
of...
Way to set up a terrible review.
Well, go look at the last preview I wrote like a week and a half before it came out, and that's everything I was being told too.
Exactly. You could look at the cover of PC Gamer had it on their cover of... got to be a year ago or so, or I don't know.
It says it on the back of the box.
And Chris Taylor was on the cover of the magazine, and they had half of his face as Chris Taylor and half of his face as, you know, this robot cybernetic thing. Again, they're stressing this was the big thing about this game, that this choice between humanity and a cybernetic being. And it's like, But you didn't do it.
Yeah. So that's sort of like the thing that happens with most games now, that we're, you know, in the planning stages, they're always telling you about how it's going to be this amazing storytelling experience, that, like, by playing it, you're going to have this, like, really cool thing happen to you. But then by the time they finish it, it just doesn't matter anymore.
Sometimes, I mean, that happens in everything in games. I mean, I was just thinking this week about how, you know, Treyarch's making the next Call of Duty game, and it's set in both Pacific and then, like, the Eastern Front. And you hear their military advisor saying all these things about, you know, the Japanese fought differently than the Germans, and more specifically, they fought differently during different years of the war, depending on which island and which phase of the war that they were in. And it sounded really familiar to what I heard when Rising Sun came out. It was the EA Pacific first-person shooter in the Medal of Honor series. And they were saying all these same things. And then when actually, you know, so they made this big case about this is a different enemy in a different game. And then when you play the game, you're like, dude, if this guy wasn't there telling me at some point, would I even notice the difference? It still looks like dudes coming out of, like, the spawn point and, like, lining up in front of a fucking MG every time I hit the trigger on it, you know? Like,
yeah.
But it just, I mean, a lot of times I think designers have these plans and it's difficult to, like, execute on them. I mean, to deliver them. And
meanwhile, they're doing, like, promotion 2 years before they're done with the game, so they're saying all this shit that just never comes to fruition.
Well, that's right. That's another problem.
Yeah.
Happens with a lot. So let's talk about Stalker, since we've both been playing that.
Yeah,
Stalker,
yeah.
Clear Skies.
Do you feel like some of the ideas not fully realized in the first one are realized?
In Stalker?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I'm like 4 hours into it, and the thing that struck me most about it was just, you know, I really enjoyed the first game quite a bit. I really liked playing it, but I'm a pussy. Like, I'm not a horror game guy, and I, you know, there are moments in that game, like long stretches where you're by yourself the whole time, and you're like fighting all the scary stuff, and you're running out of ammo, and you're all your equipment's dying, and you're like, God damn it! And I really feel like this one, they go out of their way to make you feel at least like there are a lot of people on your side, like immediately. Like it starts off, you're in this encampment for some new faction that wasn't really in the first game, Clear Sky. And within like 20 minutes, you're out in these swamps with like a pretty big crew of military guys on your side, not military guys, but guys from this faction, and you're like clearing these areas and they're helping you out, and it's a massive thing, like pretty much right off the bat. It doesn't start off with like, you know, a couple of like little shitty shootouts. It starts with like really big set piece shootouts and lots of guys on your side, and it just feels a little bit more approachable in that way. But at the same time, like, just they pour out so much stuff in that first 30 minutes where you know like where you've got to clear like all these areas and guys are asking for help every 5 seconds, you know. Did you get that?
And you don't have to do any of it. Yeah. If you don't want,
well, you have to clear out you have to do the faction war thing in the beginning, don't you?
Yeah, well, there's like when you leave the town, there's you immediately get a distress call from the local guys that are fighting like those mutant boars. Mm-hmm. You don't have to help them. There's like another watchtower that's taken over by bandits, and like if you go through the order of the missions, sort of like in the order they're made available for you,
yeah,
and that's the next one. And then there's the church, but really, if you want, you can skip all that and you go up to the big base where the guys are at, and that's the faction mission.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's definitely, like, I did everything, like you're saying. I went and every submission on there.
Yeah. At first, it seems kind of intimidating because you set out to go to one spot on the map, you're going toward it, and then all of a sudden you're like, help me, Merc, we're being surrounded! And you're like, okay.
And you have to haul ass to get there. A lot of times, if you're not fast enough, if you, like, run out of stamina or something, then it'll be like, the guys will get killed, they'll die there, you know, and then that's it.
So. Or if you get there ahead of time, because all that stuff, there, you know, the game is, like, mega about simulating things in the world, so they've got everything running on timers. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be like, okay, well, these guys are going to have their camp invaded at such and such time, and we're going to play the radio announcement to you right now. But if you're like pretty close to them when they play the announcement, they're like, help, we're being attacked, and you run over there, and if you get there really quick, there's still like a guy strumming his guitar next to the fire.
Whoops.
They're like, hey, Stalker. And then, you know, then like 2 minutes later,
this is the big interesting thing for me, is like the extent to which like things are procedural and in which they're running on a timer. And it's like the experience of playing the game is that there are all these like autonomous groups just doing things on their own. So, like, you can ignore them, and at other times you might be in a fight, and then all of a sudden assistance comes up to help you. And if you die or and you go to your last save and do it again, maybe they might not arrive because the timing is different.
Yeah.
But I do think that it is all working on, like, this route. So, like, if you were to sit there and wait, you would see those guys fight the boars in the first thing, head over to the tower, go through the church, go up the hill, and they would just basically be doing it. But you can just, like, you'd end up skipping it all by going over to some other area in the swamps, you know. That sucks that that happened, though. Like, I could
that happened
I could
to me
totally
a couple times. Yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing happening. I do like that aspect of the game is fun, though, just to see, like, what's going on. And the guys are good. They're effective in their fighting. They do use the cover well, like, in the way that when they show those demonstration videos, I was like, how much of this is scripted? How much is procedural, you know?
Yeah.
But the one problem is that the fucking enemies will push you out of the way to take your cover. So, like, if you're in a good spot, it's like you almost need to play like, shit, if I'm working with guys, if I was a programmer, where am I going to, like, tell, what am I going to, like, highlight in the code for these to be good places for our AI to go?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're there and then they want to go there, they'll just push your ass out of the way. And next thing, like, I'm hiding behind this, like, this stairwell, like, shooting guys, you know, I'm doing the lean-to thing and I'm looking down my sights and all of a sudden I'm just, like, jerking around the map and I turn and look and it's like my team is posted up where I just was. Thanks for throwing me out to the fucking...
That happened to me. There's a moment later on in the game after you leave the swamps where you're looking for this guy and you find him at the bottom of this valley standing on a rock and he's like, Merc, hurry up and get up on this rock, there are mutant dogs everywhere. And so you jump up on the rock and then all these mutant dogs come down, like lots and lots of them, and you start picking them off and the motherfucker just pushed me off the rock into this pack of dogs. He tore me apart. I was like, gee, thanks. But you know, it's bound to happen with a game with that much stuff going on. And somehow, I don't know, Stalker pulls this trick for me where, you know, somehow I'm able to swallow a lot of like bullshit, like a lot of like glitched out, sort of messed up stuff, because mm-hmm. like when it clicks, it's so awesome.
Yeah, and this is exactly how the first game was for me too.
Yeah,
I tend to be more forgiving of that sort of thing and not focus on it. I just like. I don't know
and
if
even
it's like,
sometimes
are we giving them a
it
free
makes it
pass
feel
because we got this version of their story in our minds. It's like, oh, these Ukrainians, next thing you know, they're going to have to be fending off Russia. And like, fuck, they can have a bug. It's cool.
I don't know. I think some of it is just that what they're trying to do is so cool and that what and that it has like so few comparisons to other things that I've played, at least, mm-hmm. that I'm willing to take it. And it usually doesn't really. It doesn't really break your game. I mean, it might break the illusion sometimes. Like, I mean, I came across some really, like, bad stuff later on where, you know, I'd be fighting a huge group of enemies and I'd somehow kill the magical one and all the enemies disappear.
We like, should clarify that we are playing preview.
Preview. And that's something that I imagine will... things like that should be fixed, obviously.
Hope,
like stuff where you're getting shoved out of cover just because, you know, that's how the AI is working. Like, that doesn't bother me much. But
they could fix that.
Yeah. And I think it has to do with the fact that they are, like, pushing a lot more density in the game and a lot more characters on screen, a lot more AI, a lot more simulation. Like, mm-hmm. the first game, it was, like, wide open spaces, a lot of wide open spaces with very little in between it. And a lot of that was nice in that it really set the atmosphere that people appreciate about it, but they are definitely
and it made it it communicated the sense of actually traveling. So I mean, you felt that like if you're in a new area, you felt like in an MMO, you know, when you cross these enormous spaces mm-hmm. and you don't have the teleport option,
right?
I mean, that's kind of like the cool thing about it, is you feel as though you've actually crossed some distance. I mean, it does a little bit of that.
And well, the clear sky is definitely more dense. There's more stuff to do in between. You definitely, from base to base, is a little bit shorter. I feel like there are more bases where you can like unload your loot and you know, buy new equipment and stuff. But like beyond that, there's also just lots of little pockets of enemies that you can sort of confront if you want to, little situations that you can stumble onto that I just feel like it's way more packed in mm-hmm. than the first game.
They try to, like, the real estate is much, there's much more of it now. Like, in that first level, the swamps, it's really enormous when you're going through there. And it's also cool, too, I found out that, like, just because there's time of day, dynamic time of day change and dynamic weather change, it's a whole other experience to, like, be out in, like, the reeds when it's pitch black and there's, like, lightning and rain coming down and you've got a flashlight going through the weeds and you hear, like, some shitty growling in it, you know?
Yeah.
Than it is when you're in the day and when you're with a bunch of guys, you know?
Yeah.
But then they'll also, it seems like they're trying to throw a lot more things in the environment to like keep you busy. And that will be like, you know, if there's like someone will say, hey, I got a tip for you, pay me $200 and I'll give it to you. And then what it does is it marks a point on your map and you go and maybe inside of a hole in a log, there's a stash for you to grab.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe inside of a cabin of a truck, you know, like sitting on the seat, there's like a box and then you can, and even in the past, you know, like, you know, the comment I had was there'd be these in Stalker 1, there might be these enormous, like, you know, like wonderful like sets of architecture and stuff. There's nothing in them now. When you do climb it up and around those things, there almost always is some kind of like hidden cache. You know, there's like a little tin and you shoot it open, you can get something out of it.
And they are reusing a lot of environments and buildings and assets and stuff from the first game. I mean,
it's like the same location.
I've come a lot. They've mixed them up. There's some sort of storyline about how between the prequel and Stalker, there's like some sort of mega emission that literally twists the landscape or something, because things are there, but they're not there like they used to be. They're kind of mixed up.
Right.
I don't know.
But that's one way that I'm waiting to see, because right where I'm at now is actually a section that is in the original Stalker. Of course, it appears different now.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that they get more mileage out of it than I'm seeing so far. So for example, if you go to an area that's like, I played this in the first one. This is like, there's so many opportunities here. There's one play on your expectations. There's you're used to one thing being here, and then now we can do something else with it, you know?
Yeah.
And then also in their own sense, it's like, here's a second stab at it. It's like a second edit. So it's like, well, what would we have really done now that we have the benefit of hindsight with this? You know,
yeah.
How would
you mean
we
with
change
the particular
it?
Area itself?
Yeah, so like, say if you're in whole parts of this game appeared in the original Stalker in a different form, in it, you know, although there are tons of new areas too that are enormous. And so it's like, is it really just like, hey, I remember that house, and you go in there, and now it's just maybe it was like mutated dogs before, now there's some bandits in there. But I mean, what if there's like, I want like,
well, there's a lot of like later on you find bases that at one point had been like sort of scary underground spots. You know, they're not underground bases, but like I specifically remember there was this one I don't know, maybe you'd call it like a dungeon in the original game, that where you start out in this big like concrete military complex and you make your way down, but it was always like an enemy spot. Now it's a base, or you know, they change around a lot of stuff. Like the dumps used to be like so full of radiation that you couldn't just like go traipsing up to them, and
now
you can like walk all over the dumps because they don't have that problem now or something. So
do you guys feel like, because I've only, you know, I've played like the first few hours of the original Stalker.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you think like this one's like improved upon enough or feels like so drastically different that if I like wait and play Stalker Clear Sky first before I play regular Stalker, is it going to feel like I'm taking two steps back playing the original Stalker, or like,
I don't feel like that yet. Not from what I've played. I mean, it might feel like a little more barren to play the original.
Because it almost
Stalker,
seems cool. But I mean, it almost seems cool to play the prequel before. I mean, are you the same character from the from this?
No, you're a different person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And there's technical things. Like, I mean, they've really optimized the code. So with this one, I had issues running the original. And this one runs really well, and it has like a host of new effects and stuff. So it will be a step backwards that in that respect. The other thing that sucks, I mean, I really do feel it works best for people like us who've played the original and come back to it now, is that like we've talked about this game over and over on GFW Radio since that review, since I reviewed that.
Right.
And it's like it's clear that it's been like this experience has stuck with me, but I just haven't been ready to say like I'm going to go replay that game. And so here's like a great way now. I'm like, okay, I am playing it again, and it's like I am getting the nostalgia, because sometimes it is the same areas and stuff, but there's all this new stuff and it really is a new game, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I appreciate that element.
Yeah. I still like the bizarre mix of the fact that it's still, Stalker still has this menu system and like, and a lot of graphics, like overlay graphics that look like they're from like a 1990s PC game. You know, they've gotten to all this trouble to create a world that is pretty, like, believable, modern 3D world with, like, great effects. Like Sean said, they're adding, like, all these cool lighting and like, smoke effects and crazy stuff. And but then, you know, the map and everything that you pull up. And like, even when you're talking to someone, like, in the tavern or something, it brings up, like, a little pixelated, like, face of who they are. I mean, it just looks like something from, like, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
LED battleship that you buy a battleship the game from Mattel has like better graphics at times,
but I don't know, there's
and
something
and
about
throwback
it,
stuff too, like we were talking like before we were recording, we both got to this part where these guys basically gank you in full. And it's not, you can't correct it. Like if you go to this one part and you don't, you have this choice, like these guys tell you to put your gun down and be their bitch. And you're definitely outnumbered. And when I got there, I didn't even have a radiation suit, and the environment was killing me as it was. So I was just eating through my packs. I'm like, I'm not going to fight these guys all armed with machine guns and stuff. So I'm like, all right, I'll give you my stuff. And you look, and it's like, dude, they take everything. They fucking take everything you got, every dollar you've earned from all these side missions and stuff. And that's it. You don't go 20 minutes down the road and catch up with their boss and kill them and get your shit back. It's gone.
It is
and
gone.
Like, that's unthinkable. In like, I mean, that's a really old, right? That seems like an old PC
that does sound
type
like an
thing.
Old, like, old school thing.
It's so cool because it's immersive, but
And there's just, I don't know. It's funny to see like the design choices that had this game been made by an American team would be so different. I mean, if Stalker was an American game, it would have no HUD. Like it would, they would try like really hard to keep you in the world and to not like distract you with like RPG stuff and all and everything.
And they wouldn't even have so many options for missions. They would be like, God, you know, like Western players are really completist, you know, so many of them, and they don't want to feel like they're missing out on stuff because we're offering them these side missions and they don't get there in time, or they have to choose to go this way or this way. They can't help everyone. Then they're just going to reset the game and try to do it all. It's they really want, it's like, dude, you make some choices and that's it. Like, that's how it's going to be, you know?
I mean, and just the complexity in general. Like, these guys are not shying away from complexity in any way, and they're just throwing it all at you. And then, you know, and they want you to worry about, like, radiation levels and whether or not your character has eaten lately and, like, the condition of your armor and all this all this stuff that, like, to a Western developer would seem really old school.
I totally felt that way about The Witcher, which is another, you know, East European game where they just throw every. Did you play it? Did you actually end up playing the whole thing? I mean,
the Witcher.
Yeah,
no, I've only played a little bit of it.
Okay, but like they did the same thing with the interface and the, you know, the screens for like making potions.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw that screen. There's like, you know,
yeah.
It was like actually like being in chemistry class. It was like, what the fuck is all this?
It's just that culture, I think, of like growing up completely on PC games.
Yeah.
Like, consoles never penetrated there, and it's still like totally PC dominated.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not complaining either. I liked it. I mean, it reminded me of like the old Wizardry games or where these RPGs were. It's like you really had to like think about what the fuck you were doing. And you really had to make choices with the quests and things like that. I mean, it just... I think you're right.
And now those guys are doing that, you know, download old school game service.
Good old games.
Which totally makes sense.
GOG.
Okay, before we go on to good old games again, it's time for a special segment. This is what this rattling in the background's been.
Oh, no.
We received a bunch of candy.
We're not playing this game.
We are playing this game. This week, Sammy Fala sent us a bunch of... What are they called? Bean Boozled Jelly Bellies. And the thing is, you've heard of the nasty Harry Potter jelly beans.
Bernie
Bots. Like pickled Bernie anus Bots. And like... Yeah. Like
I don't think they had pickled anus
hemorrhoidal
in Harry Potter.
Just stuff like that.
I don't think J.K. Rowling would have.
So, but the flavors were nasty. What this is they pair... They look identical, but you're basically playing roulette. So you might get what is called top banana, or it could be pencil shavings. You could get butter popcorn... Also the same color as a rotten egg, or there's like earwax latte, booger and juicy pear, baby wipes coconut, vomit peach, moldy cheese.
Let me look at the...
No, because you're part of the guinea pig. We're going to look at this.
Not it.
So what we need to do is we're all going to...
This is like sixth grade truth or dare. I'm not doing this.
Someone spent $5 buying us some fucking candy. I'm going to make it worth its while. So... We can even just do a round, but like, so the first round, let's go for these. We just take one.
Come on, we're all going to take the same flavor.
We're each taking one.
That's the worst one.
It doesn't, don't go ruining it, man.
You know, if there's one lesson that I have learned here.
I know.
It's that if Sean Elliott comes up to you and says, hey,
grab yours.
Check this
come
out.
On, it's communion.
You do not eat Sean Elliott
you just got
brings
it
to you and tells you to eat.
Ryan, there's one for you. Grab it.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
I'm eating it.
All right, everyone.
Come on, Ryan. It's a jelly
bean. Okay, everyone.
I'm terrified.
Take your jelly belly.
All right.
Try not to masticate too much into your mic.
Oh
shit.
I got peach.
Oh, fuck you.
Who got vomit?
Oh, I got vomit.
I got vomit.
Anthony, you got vomit? Oh, wait, wait, wait. Okay, the letter also says...
What the fuck?
Oh, you know what? Oh.
It is way too real.
I got that.
It is way too
real.
That
was like eating vomit.
These are actually from Sam. I read the wrong thing.
These really are Bernie bots.
Oh.
So it's something to
here's
drink.
Here's the rule, Jeff.
Oh. Yeah.
Sam, who sent this into us, says you have to chew and swallow or you're a giant pussy.
Well, I'm a giant pussy, I guess. I just spit mine
that
out.
That one was way
onto
too
the floor.
Real.
It was. That was gross.
When you said like that it would be these different flavors, I thought that it would be like a joke on it, but that was like actual vomit smell. Oh.
I haven't come that close to throwing up in a long-ass time, man.
All right, one more round then, and we'll move to something else. So let's
do
you
the
can
pairs.
Choose.
Let's do the pairs.
I already got vomit.
Pair. Okay, everyone grab one now. It's either
please
pear.
Please God.
It's either a pear or a booger.
This one can't be that bad.
What the fuck does a booger taste like?
Yeah, you don't remember?
I guess we're about to find out. All right. All
right, everyone go. Jeff, don't palm
all right.
It. Don't do no Hurley shit on this.
I got booger.
Oh, I got a booger.
I got booger.
I got booger.
It tastes like
it
dirt.
It tastes like a dirt, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Like a dirt. It tastes like a penny.
I'm not spitting this one.
I downloaded.
While you eat, while you eat,
I was trying to say I swallowed it, and I said I downloaded it.
Okay, real quick,
nerd.
I got a story to help you digest. While you eat these, go ahead and go for the next round, and I'll just tell you.
No,
a story
we're not doing. We did
eat.
Two rounds.
Why don't you guys do baby wipes and coconut?
Skip is the hero of the podcast. He just brought in glasses of water during this frat hazing we're having. Yeah. Here. Oh,
thank you, sir.
So we used to hang. My friend Hans and I used to hang out with this guy Marcel.
Yeah.
And at one point we got into this discussion about when the last time he had performed cunnilingus, and it turned out that Marcel fit a certain stereotype about black males, and that he professed not to enjoy it. And so as we're talking, you're supposed to be eating your beans as I talk about this. And while we were talking about, we're like, so wait, like when was the last time? And he's like, 93, and this was in 99, so we're just like, really? And then he just dropped a line that made it all worthwhile, and he's just like, it tastes like a penny.
A penny.
So forever after, the moral of the story is something you had doesn't taste good.
It tastes like a
tastes
penny.
Like a penny.
I think that sounds unclean.
There might be some, like we thought about, we're like, it was just random, but if you really think about it, there might be some explanation we don't want to get into that has to do with a certain cycle.
All right. Okay. I'm killing this conversation right now.
Oh, man. I just had...
Okay, one last bean right here. This is popcorn or rotten egg?
I can't do it. I can't do it.
The rotten egg is going to
be the shit.
I can't do rotten egg. Come on. It'll make... Seriously, it'll make me vomit.
Let's do it.
Oh.
Rotten fucking egg! All right. I spit that out. I'm a pussy. That's the end of that segment.
That was bad.
Oh, my God.
Whoa, that was really strong.
Wow, you should have seen these guys' faces. That was incredible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that scared me
too
much.
That was foul. Okay, so.
You know what? Is there
anything good that I can eat after that?
You just don't know. You might have popcorn. Go for it.
I don't think there's any. You should find a blue one, because that's either toothpaste or berry.
Oh, yeah.
And that one's
toothpaste
good.
Is
oh, that's
fine.
Not too bad.
This reminds me of a YouTube video I once saw where people played rock, paper, scissors, and like the loser had to put their hand in a mousetrap.
Jeez,
he could have sent some like good candy that we could
like
eat
that.
After that.
Oh my God.
Oh my
that
God.
Was foul. Okay. Yeah. So I know we can't talk about a certain game you're playing.
Yeah, I'm playing a game that's really,
Anthony.
Really good.
Toothpaste.
Anthony.
Well, at least
children.
Toothpaste.
Yeah, sorry. I was just trying to give him something to clean out that.
Oh. Candy time is over. Tell us about your homework, Anthony. You just saw Dawn of War 2 and the reveal of the Tyranid race.
It was rad.
So they're finally letting us play Tyranids. They've been teasing with this for
years. They wouldn't talk about how they play or anything yet, though, because you know all I saw was a single-player campaign mission against them. And the whole point of the level they showed us was to show, like, I don't know how much this will play into multiplayer, but they wanted you to see, like, in single-player, if you, like, because the way it works is you get an overall campaign map and you can see, like, there's, like, a light Tyranid infestation, a heavy one, etc.
Real and quick aside for those not even know Tyranids, if you've ever heard of the Zerg, you'll probably be drawing comparisons. Of course, Tyranids were around first, but this is an alien race in the Warhammer universe that's all basically insectoid-type things of different classes and...
Every single of the 12 expansion packs that Dawn of War had... Every time there'd be new races, the boards
would always
be. Do we finally get Tyranids?
Yeah.
Is it Tyranids yet? So now it is.
Yeah, and I guess part of that was maybe they just didn't think the technology was there in the original.
I think that was the original
reason. Give them. But so, yeah, we saw Tyranids, and the whole thing with them is if you, like, don't take care of their infestation early, they, like, start warping the planet. So, like, on the level we saw, it was a pretty heavy infestation. So as you progressed, it went from, like, a swamp to, like, a swamp that looked all, like, kind of semi-alien.
Was that trait of the Tyranids established in, like, the Warhammer 40,000 lore before StarCraft came out with the Zerg? Because they, of course, Zerg do some sort of terraforming. And they have
I was always under the impression, I'm not exactly an expert, but I thought that, Tyranids come and they eat everything on the planet, basically, and turn it all Tyranid, and then they move on. So, but yeah.
What do you know about Tyranid lactation?
Tyranids die. God damn it, Robert. They're not mammals. All right. So,
doy.
So like in phase one, it was like the land would look kind of shitty and there'd be like these little spore mines that would come towards you. And spore mines will just like roll up on you, semi-sentient type things that seek you out and then blow up. And like phase two was like little like turret looking things would come out of the ground and they'd launch like projectiles at you. And then phase three was like what you think of as a StarCraft hive, like a full hive would come and every 10 seconds it would spawn more Tyranids. So you have to take that shit out, or else they can quickly overwhelm you. But what was cool was
It's like the pile of bones in Gauntlet.
It was like the pile of bones in Gauntlet. But what was cool was actually seeing like the way that the Tyranids animated. And it was we were talking with, what was that guy's name? I can't remember.
Johnny?
The
producer? The lead designer?
So. Yeah, I believe so. I apologize that I don't remember your name, but if you listen. But, the coolest thing was hearing him talk about how they wanted to make the Tyranids come to life, like, because they had always done, like, in Company Heroes, they had animated squad AI, and, you know, but basically Germans, Brits, Americans, they all acted kind of the same because they're all humans looking out for themselves. But, you know, when it came to Tyranids, they're like these like hive mind organisms, so how do you portray like how they would act? And so they actually went to Jurassic Park, the film, for their inspiration. So like when you see like the things coming at you, they approach you like the way raptors would, and then they like if you approach them into melee combat, they'll like bound backwards to like get to the proper distance and stuff. It's kind of hard to describe, but if you think about the way you remember dinosaurs moving in Jurassic Park, that's kind of the way the Tyranids move. But
I remember is the scene with someone getting eaten on the toilet.
Jurassic Park 2 or something.
That was the first Jurassic Park.
It was?
It was the lawyer.
That was like one of my first
nerd experiences.
You don't
remember the scene where the fat guy got spit on?
No.
By some little dinosaur?
All I remember is it must have been one of my first nerd experiences because I left it going, the book was so much better! So, yeah.
The book was a lot better.
Yeah. But it still sucked. But if you were in fifth grade, it kicked ass. Yeah. All right, I'm going to eat another one of these things. I'm going to eat baby wipe or coconut.
You're going to pull those out. It's going to be this huge distraction.
Baby wipe? That's really
I got coconut. That's awesome.
So, eat another one.
No. I understand odds and statistics.
Yeah, but you keep eating the jelly beans. It doesn't matter what flavor you're eating.
Yeah.
You're talking to a blackjack expert here.
Yeah.
Ryan. Yeah.
Are you a
compulsive
gambler?
Are we not supposed to tell that on air?
I don't know that I would call myself a blackjack expert.
Would you call yourself a compulsive gambler?
I would be if I had the money.
Did you get to the point where you
spend all your money on gambling?
Were you begging for a comp at the casino? For like a comp at the buffet?
No.
If you were at Vegas and there was a Star Trek online convention happening at the same time, would you go to that or would you gamble?
Or would you go to the Star
Trek?
Well,
I don't actually like Star Trek. So.
What if you walked into the casino and there were 5 blackjack tables and the dealer was a Klingon at one table? which table would you go to?
Which table plays with the fewest decks?
Well, obviously he's got the fucking...
The great thing is you could have an actual, probably an hour-long discussion on that if you got a couple Star Trek
scruples with Ryan. Gambling in Star Trek.
When did you start wasting all your money on gambling?
I didn't.
Like, when did you first realize you were an addict, though?
What the hell?
What?
This whole podcast is we're just waiting to do an intervention here.
Yeah.
What's
going on?
We're trying to break the ice with the jelly beans.
First of all, you owe us all a lot of money.
He tried to say if I would go pick him up 2 scratch offs, he'd let me review Spore. And then when I brought him, he's like, "No, I need a pull tab too." And the fucking lid from 7-Up because they're running some special.
Did I ever tell you that I worked at a 7-Eleven in high school? And did I ever tell you this? I worked at a 7-Eleven in high school with like the 2 other guys who were in my band at the time. And we just like ran the place. The only other guy we ever worked with was this old dude named Ron, who was a compulsive scratch off dude who should never have been
working
at a gas station. And he would come in and just take a roll of scratch offs, like 200, pull them out, take them into the back, scratch them off, then ring them up and get the money.
Were his fingers like permanently silver?
No, he used the coin, you know? He didn't use his fingers.
I would rather like that his fingers be silver for my vision.
Not gonna lie,
but he did that for a long time.
When I go to the casino, I do hunt down the Star Wars slot machine.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you think you're gonna do better at that?
Or? No, that's the.
You
wheel.
Just like
that's,
giving that one your
that's
money.
That's the Wheel of Fortune. Just gonna feel one. That's the one I do though. Better at.
Do you guys think that gamers are more likely or less likely to gamble?
There's probably
just
like the loosest correlation, if any. I mean,
I don't know.
I don't think that gaming, like...
I feel like there's a lot of, like, poker players, you know, but maybe that's just the age group. Like, all the young people play poker now.
I think that's probably, just a general, like, age group thing. Before we leave 7-Eleven, I've been waiting for the opportunity to make this public service announcement.
Okay.
While we're still in that 7-Eleven. And I wanted to point out in the past, you know, we talked about how an abusive father can get basically everything he needs to keep his household abusive at the counter of 7-Eleven. But furthermore, a fiend can have a great time there as well. Like, if you're ever at 7-Eleven, and sometimes it might be next to the panty rose, but they're like these miniature roses, and they come in a small vial. And if you ever look at that and you're like, I don't know, just because maybe my girlfriend wants to put this on her lapel or something, but really you throw the rose away and the vial is a crack pipe and it comes with, it's open on 2 ends. And same thing when they sell like a Lucy, a single cigarette, they'll come in the same thing or a cigar and it'll have the same kind of thing. Those are all, be aware that those are crack pipes. And
awesome. What a great public service that this podcast is providing.
I have found multiple crack pipes.
How to find cheap crack pipes by GFW Radio.
No,
sponsored by Ziff Davis Media.
I'm saying that you
should. Yeah, because lots of crackheads listen to podcasts.
Ask to speak to the manager and demand an answer. Say, what is this for?
Uh-huh.
And he says it's like...
It's a mini rose.
Good thing our one Mexican cast member did that. We couldn't have got away with it.
Hey, I have a 7-Eleven story.
All right. Okay. Awesome.
I have a friend who used to work at a 7-Eleven many years ago, and I heard the story through him, and he was robbed many times at this 7-Eleven. And, you know, these dudes would come in with guns, you know, make him give him the money and everything. And he was just like, whatever, you know, I'm not taking a bullet for, you know,
minimum wage.
It
got to the point where he'd leave the register at the fucking door.
Well, it got to the point where, you know, they would come in and just be like, what's up? He'd be like, how's it going? Here's the money. Give me 5 minutes. I got to call the cops, you know.
He would hear ding, and ding, then, and just hit, like, eject on the cash register tray.
And it got so bad at one point, I guess they brought in, like, a moving truck and, like, took the arcade games.
I thought you were going to say they took the whole, like, chip aisle.
No, they took the arcade machines, and, you know, like, he was, like, they thought he was in on it.
Because
they were able to come and take the arcade.
Yeah, so
because
in that time,
they get like a dolly or something. They had like a mini forklift in the back, and they pull that down.
he's like giving them drinks in case they're sweating.
Oh, God.
Dude,
I used to hate how like cops would come into 7-Eleven. Working at 7-Eleven, like cops always come in there because they have comp cups. That you give cops like little like styrofoam cups and they come in and get Cokes and coffee
and it's
and
worth
stuff.
Worth your while because then for the 10 minutes that they're in there, you're not going to get held up.
Yeah, but I was like, you know, in the burbs or in Austin. I worked in both places. But like one time I had my guitar case in the back and, I, you know, I was like a little punk rocker guy who thought he was like badass, like rebel. And I had this bumper sticker on it that said, shoot cops, not heroin. And the cop went back there and drank his coffee and was like, whose guitar is this? And I'm like, oh, you know, I think that's somebody in the third shift.
Nice. I was going to say, I had some friends who in high school pulled their pickup truck to, there's this chain used to be called TG&Y, and they they pulled up the back of their truck to the front. And you know when they have all those little, like, vending machine things where you put your quarters in and turn the crank? And it's like a whole rack of them with, like,
Caps
eight
toys.
Of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They just, like, pulled up their truck and threw that whole fucking thing in the back of their truck and drove away. And for the next week at school, everyone had, like, three, like, plastic spiders and shit. Oh, so let's, like, before, like, we
what
go
time
on
are we doing
about 7-Eleven for another moment.
Let's take
stock of all the game stuff we played. I mean, Robert, you just saw, well, there's an EA event last week that a couple of us went to. Robert,
another fine showing by EA, I gotta say.
You just went on a boat cruise and saw The Godfather Part 2.
Yes.
It's hard being a Don.
It's hard being a Don.
We learned at the EA event that being a game designer is like being the Don.
That's really hard for me to see how that might be true.
So let's talk about Godfather before we...
I don't know what to say about Godfather. The event was like people hanging out on this yacht, like a bunch of people that I'd never met before in the game industry, and they had like this sort of card game that they made that was supposed to tell you how the Godfather strategy elements work. So you had to sit down and play this card game, which is really, like, it's a weird environment to have to learn it in because they filled the boat with, like, sort of, like, girls in slinky black dresses who would, like, bring you drinks and, like, a masseuse and all of these, you know, amenities.
Did you get a massage?
I didn't get a massage.
Actually, they had that same setup at EA.
Oh,
it should go on, but yeah, like, I believe you. I vouch for it.
What's the big lesson you learned about this boat trip, though?
Well, you never want to go to a game event on a boat.
And that's why?
Because you can't leave.
There you go. Very good. Grasshopper.
Never go to boat events, ever. That makes us sound so spoiled because, I mean, we're talking about, look what we're describing. You're going on a boat with a bunch of hot chicks and free, like, gambling and massages.
But what it misses out on is it's work. Like, it doesn't feel like you're having a party. It feels like you're there with a bunch of dudes that you don't really want to talk to, and you're going to get, like, sold on a game for 3 hours because every time someone comes up to you from the game company, they're going to want to harp on, like, the three bullet points that they're telling you about.
Right.
And it's not, you're not there to have fun. You're there to work. And I would rather just go to, like, an office and have the demo and learn about the game and go.
Yeah, it's a gimmick that doesn't work. Were you guys at Ziff Davis when they had the Christmas party on the boat?
Yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Because that was a fucking nightmare. For the exact same reason. You couldn't leave. You were stuck. You know, and first of all, it's the office Christmas party, right? I mean, and of course, Ziff didn't let you bring your spouses because that's just the way Ziff rolls, or your girlfriends or whatever. It's like, holiday party? No, you can't bring your family. So it was on this boat, and it was like, first of all, it was freezing. It was freezing outside, and it was crowded inside. So it's either like be with your sweaty coworkers inside or freeze outside. And then, like, less than halfway on the course of this trip, they ran out of food. Okay, so you're at this party without food. Oh, and there was no, like, decent alcohol either. So you're at this party with your workmates at night when you'd rather be home on a boat. It was freezing and there was no food. So we actually, like, went into the boat's, like, storage compartment and found, like, packs of, like, chips.
Saltines.
Like, 75-cent chips, like Lay's potato chips. And we're breaking them out like we'd been, you know, shipwrecked for, like, 5 days. People are like, oh, my God, thank God, fucking potato chips. How many packs have you had? You already had two. Give me that. I haven't had anything to eat. And this is, like, our Christmas party.
No.
This is, like, thank you for working here.
And you were also on the bay for 2 hours too,
and we couldn't go home.
We couldn't go home.
It was like when we finally hit land. Thank God, we're home.
That is so sad. Anyway. This was nothing like that.
So I've never gone to a boat party
ever since.
Yeah, but the game I think actually looks fairly interesting. I mean,
really,
I think it's a little bit depressing to me to see that, like, after, you know, there was a bit of a stink when they made the first game. Everyone was sort of like, oh, they got The Godfather, you know? Are they really going to be able to make a game that lives up to The Godfather? Now it's like, oh, hey, come check out our new strategy crime game. It's called The Godfather 2. It's like The Godfather is now just like a brand.
They got over the whole movie.
There will be like 20 games now, I guarantee you, like anything, you know?
I noticed when we were at PSP EA and they did for this Gamers Day, and they did a little video presentation. That's when the guy said, being a designer is like being a Don. And they started showing this trailer for Godfather. The music was like this like 60s James Bond music. Godfather 2. I'm like, hello? They have like the most famous soundtrack in film fucking history. Where is it? They paid like how many millions for this license? They're using this like Get Smart music.
And they're not taking like the visual cues from the movie like they did with the first one. It's really bright, saturated colors. Yeah. It actually looks a lot more like the Scarface game from a couple years ago.
Right?
What's that?
It's set in Miami, if not
it's
there.
It's Miami, Cuba, and New York City.
Okay.
So,
and that makes sense because that's what the movie was set in.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have anything to do with Godfather 2, the movie, right? Or does it?
Well, I think it does. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to relate. I don't know how closely it's going to relate. I'm sure that they'll try to use key scenes. I mean, that's what they did. I played through the original game, and it was sort of like you were like the Forrest Gump of Hitman.
Right.
Like you happened upon every famous scene in Godfather just because you just happened to be this dude who was there. Uh-huh.
No, you're right. In fact, aren't you the guy who seriously, you're the guy who like has to kill the horse.
You wielded Black Hand technology, right?
Oh, don't start that.
Right. No, don't you bring the I think you bring the horse to the guy's bed.
They come up with all these things where like the guy who's sort of behind the scenes making all
the
this
Rosencrantz
stuff
and Guildenstern.
But like as a game, what's interesting about it is I really enjoy open world games that don't have like a strict mission structure to where you can something like Stalker where you can just happen upon events and like approach things like Crackdown where you like go and you find that one part of town where you gotta like lay siege and do something big and it's really open ended. I think they're trying to do a lot more interesting stuff in that regard here because it's like this open-ended take over the city kind of game where you're competing against, you know, four or five other families and you have all of these sort of things at your disposal. You have associates that you gain sort of RPG style. You go around recruiting guys. You got to have money to recruit them. But once you do, they have like sort of attributes and powers that you can use against people. You know, some of them might have like stealth kill abilities or like the ability to firebomb a store or whatever. You can sort of manipulate all of these things as you're playing a more traditional like crime, you know, open world game. And it looks like it could be pretty good.
Mm-hmm. They should have your character from the first Godfather game and make a joke of it like he's the like
oh that'd be funny
he's where he ends up in every crew, like, you know, if you get the firebomb squad, like that guy ends up with them somehow, and then like every time you like that dude is there no matter who you're dealing with, or like he's just in there,
or every shit job they should just say, hey, let's have this guy do it.
We got to play a little bit of Battlefield Heroes at the EA event. I'm waiting this week we're getting like I think this evening we're getting our beta invites finally, so we'll be able to talk about it in greater depth. It's kind of difficult. I mean, in these events, there's a line of people. You sit down for 5 minutes, and then like they kind of like politely indicate that okay, your time's up. Like let someone else sit on it, and it's like okay, whatever. But
there's
always some
dude though who's sitting there like he's at his fucking arcade, you know, in his neighborhood, just some fat ass
oblivious
sitting there for like 25 minutes.
Everyone behind him.
Yeah.
But I was able to see in that time that, I mean, it seems like they're really going all out now with the character customization stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, even whereas at one point it seemed like it was all within the sort of this like fiction that they're creating. So it would be like soldier like gear that resembled that of the gear from the Allies or the Axis or something. And now it's like it's gone to the Soul Calibur level where, I mean, you'd be wearing like a chicken wing for a hat or something. You know, I mean, it's like. It's just in.
They're going out of their way to show all the crazy shit in there.
So,
now.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that that's what's going on.
But they might as well, right?
They might as well. And that stuff is like, right now, that stuff has proven so successful. You know, I just did this preview for Crisis Warhead, and, you know, it got me thinking about. I hadn't anticipated, if you asked me like 2 years ago what the trend in multiplayer shooters would be, it definitely seemed like everything was taking the Battlefield direction. And then so many games did do that. Last season, we had so many Frontlines and UT3 and Quake Wars and all these things, and none of those like was a breakthrough. Crisis Power Struggle mode included, and of course, what is Call of Duty 4 and Team Fortress, and both of those games. Team Fortress now, it's kind of been an afterthought. I mean, I'm not saying Team Fortress is popular just because it has achievements and stuff, but I don't think it's hurt. Likewise for COD 4, it's a fantastic game. It's just they're also the simplicity and like the streamlining of those games is a huge part of that success. But it's also proven popular. People like to just keep playing so they can rank up, you know. And like, given that, simplify Battlefield and give people a ton of shit to keep playing for. I mean, it seems pretty wise.
For a game like Call of Duty, I always wonder, or even Team Fortress, what is the financial incentive to wanting players to continue to play when they're not paying like a monthly fee or something?
They do sell map packs occasionally, and I have on the 360. I've purchased. The map packs were $10. Like, they did over 1 million downloads of their $10 map pack, which means they made, like, $10 million off of something they didn't actually have to produce a physical, like, media for.
So, in the long run...
It's a good question.
The recognition, say for what happened with the Halo games, right? Mm-hmm. If people are playing your game from the time it comes out until the time the sequel comes out... Eventually, other people are hearing them talking about it, and they're like, it just becomes established in the popular mentality. And every subsequent sequel sells more and more because then people are like, oh, I'll jump on now. That's the game everyone plays. That's the one that, if there's a sitcom on TV, that's the one the kids are playing in the background. That's the one that grandma knows the name of.
And, yep.
I mean, you build that kind of devotion, that, you know, dedicated fan base. And
yeah, the name recognition alone is priceless. I mean, I don't know how many times in the last 6 months, 8 months, where, like, you know, other parents or like relatives who with kids would say, like, my son wants this game. I need you to help me because you're the gamer in the family. It's some World War II thing. And I go, oh, Call of Duty. And that's it every time. And it was amazing that game had achieved that kind of – it had hit that level.
Yeah. You know? The other thing is that you persuade – say there's someone who hasn't bought Team Fortress yet, right? Maybe this is the month where, like, because that's what all their friends are still playing and they hear that there's all this new stuff out, then they'll buy it now. So, I mean, they have a long tail on them and people...
Yeah, I mean, especially with Team Fortress, it's a little bit mysterious to me because you get everything for free.
Right.
You know, but I guess, you know, they keep this buzz about it. I mean, I do see every fucking time there's any sort of update about Team Fortress, it's at the top of Dig. So I guess they get lots of...
You know the thing that was fucking weird for me about this whole, like, the success of the games in the Orange Box, notably Team Fortress and Portal, is that, like, I was always a Team Fortress Classic player, and I, like, this is, like, a group of people, and you had this one thing for it. But then it became, like, it's like the freaks fucking stole it. And, like... I mean, I don't mean that, like, we were in this case, it's like, you know, it just moved, it changed hands. And what I mean by freaks is it's like, you see, I mean, people that, like, just like hentai and anime type stuff, you know, where, like, they're drawn Team Fortress characters, like, having sex with each other and Portal, like, getting, like, these shitty Portal tattoos. And you'll see, like, their webpage, and it's like, you know how it is when you go to some space on the internet and, like, it's just inscrutable to you? You just really have no understanding of, like, who's doing this.
It's like
you're
an ancient scroll.
Yeah. And you're like, the stuff that they're doing is just so alien to you. And, like, totally that's the group that just grabbed a hold of both Portal and Team Fortress 2. It's really weird. And you see all these, like, shitty comics and stuff with them in it, and, like, I mean, we talked about it before, the whole, like, the cake is a lie thing. It's like, I don't want to hear about the cake anymore, you know? Like,
to some extent, I guess that's kind of another reason that Valve keeps up the thing of that going, though, because I know that they do pretty well with the merchandising for both Portal and Team Fortress 2. So I'm sure that doesn't hurt.
Yeah, they can get even more into that.
I mean, how many companion cubes can you sell?
They always sell out of them as soon as they get them.
They could make a companion cube fleshlight, and I'm sure it would sell.
Someone has done it already.
At some point, WoWhead put companion cubes in. They put, like, a little thing, like a little sort of homage to the companion cube in their game.
I still admire, like, how there were these strangely resonating things in that game that people just couldn't let go, like the companion cube.
The companion cube was really, I don't know, I don't want to be too predictable because I always bring up, like, Asperger's all the time, but I mean, that's the case where I kind of wonder, when someone tells you that they felt more for the companion cube than they did for, like, you know, the Little Sisters and Bioshock or whatever, all these other Alex and Half-Life, it's like,
Yeah.
You really got to wonder at that point, you know?
Who said that, though? I thought the companion cube was
over and over
joke.
Again.
Like, I mean, I liked it.
I thought it was
joke.
Funny. Yeah.
It was a great joke, but I've seen that
I
all
felt
over.
Nothing for
do
companion a, cube.
Do some searching for it, you know? Really? I mean, I've seen tattoos where on one guy's arm, he'll have a companion cube and it says love, and on the other, there's a cake and it says lies beneath it. I mean, it's pretty. That's real.
People do a lot of sad things to themselves.
Well, I was looking through your Twitter page.
Like Twi'lek tattoos.
Yeah, Anthony's thought about getting Star Wars tattoos. actually, he has it planned that he wants to get the symbol of the Old Republic and the New Republic on his forearm.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah,
that
guy's a loser.
Cut off Anthony's pay right now so you don't fund that trip to the tattoo parlor.
I don't pay the dude. He does.
I witnessed, thanks to your Twitter page, a picture of some naked guy with bad tattoos having sex with an AT-AT or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too.
I was like,
I've never looked at Sean's Twitter page.
It's good. It's
well,
actually
there you go.
It's probably the best aggregator I know of for pictures. Like, uh-huh. You don't have enough videos right now, but it's like a lot of pictures.
You need to go to my YouTube favorites for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're saying your YouTube favorites are a better aggregator?
They're a repository of everything stupid you could want to see on the internet. Yeah.
That sounds pretty good. I need stuff like that because I sort of don't have any good places to pick up stupid content for the internet right now. So
Sean is my whole conduit for that.
Yeah. Well, then I stopped. It's dried up because I just put it on the Twitter thing. So I feel
so wait, all those photos you've been aiming me, is that all the stuff that ends up on the Twitter?
Some of those have been, yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything like that. I did aim you.
Like that billboard that says that, look out, there's a cop hiding behind there. And then there is a cop hiding behind that billboard. Yeah. That
it's
awesome.
Like, that's where the, slow down, that's where the
slow
cop
down,
hides.
That's where the cop hides, yeah.
That was an old great. One. Sometimes, since I just started, I've been updating it with all the classics. Well, if we're dried up, I think we should all go out.
Wait, I got to read this thing.
Yeah,
I'm reading. I got to read something to you from the campaign trail. Okay,
when we end, Anthony's volunteered to eat a mouthful.
No, dude, I've been slumping in my chair because I've been seriously feeling sick to my stomach.
Yeah,
puke.
That puke one was bad.
How many can you put? How many all at once could you eat?
Oh god!
They look nauseating. Just look at those colors,
especially the rotten egg.
None
ones.
Of those colors are
the
like natural human colors.
The worst. Okay, go ahead and read. Okay, thing, and right now I'll get Robert a handful.
Okay, so
of
this this was forwarded to me today. This is from the campaign trail. This is actually a serious news item. This comes from CNN. McCain, and let me just preface this: there's no political. Angle here that I'm working here. I'm just saying this was in the news, okay? On the campaign trail, I guess McCain has been telling the story about how when he was a POW and in a moment of inspiration or whatever, he drew a cross in the sand, okay, and that inspired him. So after he told the story, he's gotten some shit from the left saying that he actually swiped this story from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, that he told a story
this.
Before and that McCain told the story in a different context in another way, basically that it's not true or implying that that it might that he's fudging
it.
Well,
the Solzhenitsyn version is to reciting writing poems in his head in the gulag.
Well, there was something about a cross too. So anyway, McCain has an aide named Michael Goldfarb, and on his website he has a blog, and he wanted to comment on the fact that the left was giving McCain shit for this. So here's what this guy wrote. in response to this, quote, "It may be typical of the pro-Obama Dungeons and Dragons crowd to disparage a fellow countryman's memory of war from the comfort of mom's basement. But most Americans have the humility and gratitude to respect and learn from the memories of men who suffered on behalf of others," he wrote.
It's
and
such
then
a
he just goes on,
reversal
like, what the
also
fuck?
Of the Swift boat thing with Bush and.
I mean, this has nothing
Kerry.
To do with Republicans or Democrats or whatever.
But just the dungeon.
That's the angle he took. Like,
he must be reacting to the whole internet.
There's a dispute
thing.
About this story, and he's saying the pro Obama Dungeons and Dragons crowd. I don't even get that.
I don't know. He must be thinking Dig or something like that would pile onto a story like that, and who also the top story right underneath that is new level of Super Mario Brothers.
But it's
Brothers.
Still hilarious.
I heard Obama's not a big fan of fourth edition.
So actually the epilogue to that is just that apparently some angry D&D nerds wrote
you know, spam this guy or spam the McCain website. And now there's actually an apology up saying, you know, my apologies to all the hardworking Dungeons & Dragons fans in America.
A lot of those D&D fans are also card-carrying NRA members and stuff. Well, they have, like, MAC-10s and stuff.
Yeah, that's the other part. It's like, you know, the D&D fans I knew tend to be fairly conservative, a lot of them. It just seemed like a weird, like, how do you make that leap? Like, I can see disputing the story or disputing the people disputing it. I can see that, that there'd be some controversy over whether this guy, whether McCain, you know, what the origin of this sort of story is. Yeah. But to lump Dungeons and Dragons
it's just
into
a dated,
there, what?
Like, way of saying being out of touch with reality, but instead of like World of Warcraft or something.
Yeah, but you would, but think you would say like the Hollywood liberals or something, some more like expected.
I think
target.
It's just like McCain and his crowd are so disconnected from the internet that their whole like vision of it is like, oh, it's those Dungeons and Dragons kids again.
It's like it's 1974 like all
70s,
over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Robert, now your punishment for that political comment we don't welcome on the show is to eat a handful of these. It's butter, popcorn, and rotten egg. So
I don't think I could do rotten egg. I could do...
Yeah, you look kind of ill after the rotten
egg. Stuff and eat. See what happens.
Are you really going to do it? Don't do it. Why? Sean is... I can't believe he gets people to do this.
That's a good mix. That's
a good mix. Well, because sometimes it could make like a new flavor.
Skip says he's not cleaning up your vomit.
Okay.
Skip did bring us all water.
I've got like six of these.
Oh, jeez.
He had moldy cheese in there.
On-air Harry Carey.
Earwax.
But it could have fruit and popcorn, too. Like, what if...
He's not speaking.
Ryan, you're a gambling man. What are the odds that he got nothing but delicious flavors?
they're really not very good.
Slim as hell.
Who was the character in Willy Wonka that started turning colors and then blew up like a blueberry? That's like Robert Ashley right now.
If I were an onophile, I would say that I detect hints of black pepper.
The smell coming out of his mouth makes me want to throw it.
some vomit. Some skunk. And then something that's actually sweet. I think I got
that's
a coconut.
That's good. You skunk was in there and was coconut.
Here. Oh. I get you a baby wipe to wash
here,
it down with.
No, I'm going to swallow it.
There's a baby wipe right there.
Oh, God. Okay. All right, I'll eat it.
All right. I think this podcast is over.
Booger,
it
tastes like
we're done here. We're done.
Oh, it's coconut.
Keep eating your boogers and your baby wipes.
I'm eating black pepper right now.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.